Hey, it's 2019 and we're shaking things up with our first podcast of the year by changing our name. We're now the TV Insider Podcast, but the good news is that we'll still be bringing you all things television from the best, the worst, and everything in between. We'll have interviews, roundtable discussions, and people like Matt Rausch and Damien Holbrook bringing us their TV recommendations and observations, and some cheers and jeers along the way. I'm Jim Halterman, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide Magazine, and with the new year comes a lot of new series for us to obsess over and see if they're worthy of our time, as the returning shows are also trying to get our attention with new episodes. Hopefully, we can help steer you in the right direction with all the offerings, including Freeform's new series, Good Trouble. The one-hour dramedy is a spinoff from fan favorite The Fosters and follows the now-grown-up Adams Foster sisters Mariana, played by Sierra Ramirez, and Callie, played by Maya Mitchell, as they move to Los Angeles into their first adult jobs. I sat down with executive producers Peter Page and Bradley Bredewig to talk about how they made the spinoff feel different from its predecessor and what we can expect in the 13-episode first season, which is currently airing on Freeform. First, though, TV Guide Magazine senior writer Damien Holbrook gives us his first cheers and jeers of the new year, including his take on the final season of fan favorite Gotham and much, much more. Let's see what Damien has to say.
Hey everyone, I'm Damien Holbrook from TV Guide Magazine and TV Insider, and I'm here to give you the best and worst of TV in the last couple weeks. Big old cheers to Gotham, coming back for its fifth and final season with craziness on tap. They have killed off a character already. They have set up that Gotham is completely cut off from the outside world. Bruce Wayne is becoming Batman. You've got a Harley Quinn character showing up. You've got, we still haven't seen Bane. That's coming along, but the first couple episodes of the season have been huge, and if this is how they're starting the season, I cannot wait to see how they end the series. Cheers to sci-fi's Deadly Class. So if The Magicians is Harry Potter in grad school, Deadly Class is kind of like La Femme Nikita meets prep school. This is based on a comic book series about a group of kids of assassins who are basically sent to a prep school to be trained to be assassins, and it's this great, diverse cast. The action is fantastic. The fight sequences are amazing. And it's adult, it's violent, it's funny. It's set in 1987, so the music is amazing. And it's just a very highly stylized, fun, escapist adventure. So I would definitely say you want to enroll in Deadly Class. Now, cheers, it has to be said, The Masked Singer. Mother of God, what is this? I know everyone watched it. We all watched it. We all tweeted about it. Who's the singer? I'm sure it's Donny Osmond in the first outfit. I'm sure of it. But what the hell with these costumes? Like, no, nightmare fodder. These costumes are like Mardi Gras crossed with American Horror Story crossed with like Build-A-Bear or something. It's terrifying. The music is good, and I think it's a great idea. The judges are terrible. The visuals are just terrifying. Of course, I'm going to watch it, but I have to jeer it because it haunts my daily life now. Jeers to The Bachelor. And again, you guys, I'm a huge Bachelor stan. I love the show. I love Colton Underwood. I think he's a great guy. My jeer is everyone's obsession with his virginity. You wouldn't ask somebody like, every woman asked him about it, basically. And it was like, you wouldn't ask somebody who's missing a leg, hey, how'd you miss your leg? I'm obsessed with his leg. Why is he missing a leg? You would move on and get beyond it. He's more than just his virginity. The man's a hunk. He's also super sweet. We've met him a couple times. Loveliest guy. But jeers, stop focusing on the fact that he hasn't done it yet. That's actually admirable. So get on board and get Underwood. Get it? Because he's Colton Underwood. No? But yeah, jeers to this. Ladies, be better. Or in the words of Melania, be best. Agree? Disagree? Follow me on Twitter at Damien Holbrook, and you can let me know, but be polite, and I will be too. And I'll be back in 2 weeks to give you more cheers and jeers.
Thank you, Damien. Now we're going to dive into my interview with Good Trouble executive producers Peter Page and Bradley Bredewig to talk about the new spinoff from The Fosters on Freeform. Let's check it out. All right, guys, we're here to talk Good Trouble. We're here with Peter Page and Bradley Bredewig. Congratulations, you guys.
Thank you.
First of all.
Thanks so much.
I've seen several episodes of the show, and I was a big Fosters fan, as you guys know. Before I was a TV Guide, I was a big fan. But when did the spinoff kernel first start to form? And of course I want to know why it was, you know, Mariana and Callie, because it could have been any. It could have been WeHo Jude. That could have been the spinoff. I don't
know. Maybe that's the next one.
But
fans are very excited he's coming this week.
Yeah, I know. But of course the Fosters had such diehard fans
a spinoff made a lot of sense. But when did you guys really first start thinking about it, or when did the network?
Not really, honestly, until they told us the Fosters weren't coming back.
Okay.
They were trying really hard to get a season 6 of the Fosters, and it wasn't until that just finally wasn't happening that they came to us and said, "Is there any idea for a spinoff?" And we just really hadn't talked about it much. And sort of Brad and Joanne and I looked at each other, and one of us, I don't remember who, said, Callie and Mariana moved to LA to start their adult lives. And they said, sold, we'll do 13 on the air. And I'm not kidding.
That's amazing.
Okay. It was this time last year, right? It was around this time that we found out.
Well,
it was January, I believe.
No, we were already in Turks and Caicos. We already headed to Turks and Caicos. We had already written those. No, we weren't. Really? It was earlier than this.
We announced it though.
Yes, that's when it got announced.
Yeah.
That's when they all got announced.
Yeah.
But we knew in like October or November, I think.
Well, and it's also
but yeah.
Our timelines are weird. Yeah. It all runs together.
Yeah.
It did happen fast.
Yeah.
But we don't have to get into this too much, but do you think it's because they thought the Fosters had kind of told the stories that needed to be told, or is the network going in a different direction? What was the reasoning?
Financial.
Okay.
It was money. So the Fosters didn't sell as well as they needed to around the world.
Okay.
Yeah. And every season a show gets more and more expensive, as we know. And sure. So when it comes down to that, they really have to make some hard decisions. And so it was heartbreaking for everyone. The network did not want the Fosters to go away, clearly. And that's why we're doing good trouble.
Yeah.
So, at least we're still in the same world.
Okay. Well, so then, of course, then you have to settle on what you want to do. And it was Callie and Mariana are kind of the focus of this 5 years in the future. But why them? What was kind of the appeal for you guys just in the planning stages?
Callie and Mariana both had such drive. They both had such ambition. That it felt really clear. It just felt really clear. Sierra and Maya are literally best friends. They're practically sisters in real life at this point.
So their chemistry is like off the charts.
Chemistry's off the charts. They're
also polar opposites, like as characters, you know, and that's always fun to explore, especially when they're living together.
Yeah, and it wasn't really something we consciously sort of went through, what would we do with these two? What would we do with those two? It was literally a kind of split second, what do you think? Network, also it's Freeform. Freeform is targeted, their target demo is, you know, women in their teens and 20s.
Yeah.
So it seemed like an obvious choice on some level to grab the women in their teens and 20s.
Okay.
So.
Well, and knowing what's on the network now, like The Bold Type and shows like that, when I watched the first Good Trouble, I was just surprised at the tone of it. And I was like, wow, this feels adult. Mm-hmm. These characters feel like the same characters, but they did feel 5 years older because, you know, one of the things I always loved talking to you guys about with Maya was just like, you know, oh my God, Callie. Like was just always
Hashtag poor Callie.
I know. But now she's still made what I've seen in the show so far. She's still making those mistakes, but they're as an adult. They're not like a teenager who's, you know, dealing with a lot of personal stuff. It's more just life.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great angle.
Yeah. She's still the same human being.
Yeah.
I mean, she's still carrying the same, you know, the same load. So she's still got the same stuff to sort out.
Yeah. And because the show does feel different, what was the talking points there to make sure it didn't, you know, it still feels like an extension of the Fosters, but it looks different. It sounds different. Like everything about it feels freshened up, not to say that the Fosters wasn't, but you know what I mean? It's sexy too. Yeah.
Well, I think, look, the network had aged up. The characters had aged up. So that meant the stories were going to age up. Mm-hmm. And that meant the storytelling style needed to age up. And so it everything pushed us in that direction. It just only made sense. You wouldn't want to tell those 20-something stories with the same hand.
No. Yeah. But we didn't want to lose the same heart and sort of social justice point of view that we had on the Fosters. So we made sure that we carried that along with us under those guises, you know? Yeah.
What are the benefits of them being 5 years older and the fact that you don't have to tell teen stories, even though the teen stories were very adult at times, but now they're truly adults. Mm-hmm. So what's the freedom in that for you guys as creators?
Well, do you remember your 20s? I mean, your 20s are as messy as it got, you know? And so we sort of, that's the backbone of the show. It gave us a freedom to explore all of those ups and downs that you find yourself, especially in a big city in your early to mid 20s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that was always, I mean, it's it, certainly, you know, my first year out of college is bar none the hardest year of my life. There's not even anything that comes close.
Yeah.
And that sort of sense, you come out of college thinking you know everything, thinking you're going to teach the world a lesson, and the world's just like, no, you're not. Yeah. I'm going to teach you some lessons first. and that exquisite pain, that kind of unbelievable joyride where the highs are so high and the lows are so low, felt really right.
Okay. I also remember, like, everyone, all of my friends, we were all in each other's business constantly 24/7. And now they're living in the coterie. So it's even worse than I think we had it, or I had it when I was in my
20s. Right.
So that just adds to the messy sophistication of the show, I think.
Yeah. I actually love the concept of them living in this home. What is it actually called?
It's called the coterie.
The coterie, yeah. But it's where just a group of young people are living. It's
communal living.
Communal living. Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah, which yeah. I guess that does exist, but I didn't know. But
it does exist more and more in big cities because people can't afford.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you just have a big like loft space that's broken up into apartment kind of things.
I had a dear friend that was living at this place called the Brewery in downtown Los Angeles, and they took over this old brewery, and it's all these young artists and, you know, young 20, 30 somethings that bought it, I guess, and they turned it into communal living, and it was one of the first in the state.
Oh, that's cool.
And so that's sort of what was the seed of the idea for this. We wanted to figure out how to, this genre has been done before, Melrose Place, all of those shows that came before it, but how do we create a show that stands apart from that and makes it feel more modern and right now?
Right now.
Yeah.
Right now. That was Brad. Brad was the one who came in and was like, you know, communal living's kind of becoming a thing, and Trent and I were like,
there's something there. And we just started to like dig in and explore it. And, you know, the coterie was born out of it.
Okay. I love it. So, you know, as you guys know, with spinoffs, sometimes spinoffs want to set themselves so far apart from the original that you don't even want to hear anybody mentioned. Obviously, you're not doing that here.
No.
Jude's in this week's episode. I know
Noah comes, the moms are in.
Exactly. The moms come back a couple of times.
Yeah.
So was that kind of like, this has to be a part of the show for you guys, that they have to be?
It was super important. One of the reasons we wanted to do a spinoff was to keep the family alive. The family is important to a lot of people and to us. So if that was the way, if this was the road we needed to go down to keep that family alive, that was the road we were going to go down. So super important.
And I also remember, like, I moved to New York in my early 20s, and it was the scariest thing I'd ever done in my entire life. I was in a whole new city by myself, barely had any money, and I constantly called my mom, even though I was an adult and moved out of the house, for, you know, that I needed her, sometimes more than ever, you know, and so I think in your 20s, you need your family sometimes more than ever.
Okay.
So that's why they're around, too.
Okay. I love it. This will come out right after the Jude episode.
Great.
So... And I, what I loved about that episode is you do get to catch up with Jude a little bit. If you've never seen The Fosters, you still get a sense of who he is. But for those of us that do, it's a nice little reward to hear that he's got an active social life and he talks about his sex life. And I loved all that. But, you know, how do you guys approach bringing those characters in so they do get freshened up a little bit themselves, but also don't detract from what you're doing in Good Trouble?
That's the hard part. You know, it's very easy. It's very easy to say like, oh, the family will come back. But then it's sort of like we've got eight characters who drive story on the show already, and then we're bringing in these other characters who we want to have some story of their own. It's a tricky balance.
Yeah. So how do they you know work into the coterie? How do they you know highlight those stories, but also bring new points of view that are necessary?
The most successful one is the moms visiting the first time, seeing where their daughters are living in this really weird place with these strange people. How do they feel about Dennis, for example? Like, you know, there's a real natural drive there and some natural conflict there. The other kids, it was harder to weave them through.
Yeah. And Peter directed this next episode, or the one that's airing.
Right? Yeah, the Jude episode.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's such a fun episode. It's, you know, one of our party episodes. I don't feel like we've done one quite like this. And, you know, I always feel like the second episode of a brand new series is the hardest episode to direct, because you're coming out of the pilot and you know, the pilot is such a hard thing to do to begin with. But then the second episode is, how do you really fill out this world properly?
Yeah. With Peter, less time.
With less time.
With less time.
Yeah, and it's beautifully done. So, beautifully done.
Thank you very much.
Well, Peter, because you did direct The Fosters as well, what were there any different challenges this time? Because it is a different show with a different look and all of that.
It's a completely different visual vocabulary. Completely different. So it requires a different way of thinking about it. We're on this show, we're really trying to give the audience a subjective experience with the characters. We want to put you as close to whatever character is at the center of the scene as we possibly can. And so it's about sort of what tricks do we have in the bag that we can use to really make sure you're feeling what Alice is feeling. You are thinking what Mariana is thinking. You are looking at the world through their lens. This show is kind of almost never meant to be objective.
Okay.
Where you're just sort of sitting outside it, looking at it. You're meant to be inside it in these stories with these people.
Okay. And you guys broke a lot of ground with The Fosters as far as, you know, Jude's sexuality and trans characters. And pretty much, I think you hit on everything throughout the run of the show. This one, I love what you guys are doing with bisexual characters.
We didn't do bisexuality really on The Fosters.
Yeah, I was trying to think if you had done anything.
I don't think we did. I don't think we beed. I think no. We LG'd and T'd, but I don't think we beed. Well, we Q'd.
Jimena might have been. We sort of...
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But yeah. We didn't really investigate it. We ran out of time.
Yeah,
because yeah, from really at the spoiler, if people haven't seen the first episode, but you find out at the end that Gael dates men and women, and mm-hmm. it's like wow. And so the second episode, the one with Jude, it does ask all the questions that I think people normally ask. But what's your objective, I think, for approaching this, so people do get kind of a fresh maybe perspective on what bisexuality is, because there's a lot of commentary on that in the community.
It's just wildly underexplored. You know, we're still, I think, bisexual
and people misunderstood.
Are, yeah,
for the
people,
most part,
bisexual people are still wrestling with those tropes. You know, from when we were all coming out of like sort of like bisexual, it's the last stop on the gay express.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. or it's a phase for women. It's a phase, and for men, it's the last stop before they go full gay. And that's just such a false notion. And bisexuality is just not something that's been much explored in the media. So it felt long overdue and very, very right for us to put a bisexual character.
I had a dear friend growing up who is still a bisexual man. And he always, the thing he hears from everyone is pick one. Why can't you just pick one? Yeah. Like that's always the question or the point of view, which I find so interesting. Like why is that the question or point of view?
Yeah. And why do I have to pick a gender? I'll pick a person.
Yeah.
But why do I have to pick a gender? Why do I have to do that first?
Yeah.
So the sorting is easier so I make you more comfortable? I don't understand that at all.
Yeah. So we really go there. It's like we really explore Gael throughout these first 13 episodes and hopefully, you know, into season two, if we get one, which I think we might, but we'll see.
fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But we really, we explore all angles of a bisexual male. And we're really proud of that.
Well, and I don't know the history of bisexual characters on TV, but the fact that it's kind of the hunky guy of the show mm-hmm. is the one you're exploring this with. I don't know if that's normally the choice. It seems like that. I really applaud you guys for that.
Relegated somewhere.
Kind of.
A little further to the outside. Yeah, that was one of the things we wanted to do. And, you know, and pretty quickly we find ourselves in a love triangle where our Callie, one of our two lead females, is in a relationship, is dating a man who's also dating a man. I don't think I've seen that before.
Especially for season one, the A story love story. You know, that's what we're really focused on here, and that's exciting.
And I just love all the commentary about it, and even just the conversations that Mariana and Callie have about it, because it's like, well, how do you feel about this? And it's like, I'm not sure. And
yeah.
That's kind of like how I would approach it, because I don't think I ever dated a bisexual person that I knew of.
I did.
But you know, those questions all come up, because, it's like, how do you feel when you're not committed in a relationship, but you see them getting close with another guy across the room during this party.
Yeah.
Which I love all that stuff. I was kind of clapping on my couch with all that fun. It is Melrose Place-y a little bit, which I love that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But we take that as a compliment.
Yeah. So just preview when the moms do show up. What's that story or how does that go as far as, I don't know where in the season.
Well, Brad directed the hell out of that episode. It's fantastic. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, good.
And had such a blast. I mean, it was so great to have the two of them, Terry and Sherry, back. And, you know, there's so much love between Maya and Sierra and those two women. And it was just vibey-wise, it was so great to have them. But it's the first time the moms come to see where Mariana and Callie are living. Okay. And sort of all hell breaks loose because of it. I don't want to give away too much. Okay. But, you know, the moms do get sort of very much involved in the girls' lives in that hour. And it's a lot of fun.
Okay. Where does that fall in the season?
It's five. Episode five. February 9th, I think. Whatever that Tuesday is.
Okay. Yeah. That's okay. We'll target that too.
Yeah.
And Jesus is coming. And of course, Noah is a very different person than he was even a year ago.
He's not a very different person than he was.
I mean, as far as the profile, but to be clear, he's not.
He came to the premiere. He, you know, told us he'd love to maybe do some in season two. Nice. He still feels like a part of the family, and that's a beautiful
thing. I said that wrong, so I meant
No. I said it right. But it's totally fine. Don't worry. I just wanted to be super, super clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's still the same old Noah that, you know.
Yeah.
We sort of, I mean, he had done a couple of things before The Fosters, but The Fosters obviously was his first series. And it, you know, it launched him in a really beautiful way. And now he's out in the world just flying high and
killing it.
So proud of him.
And it kind of makes sense.
I directed his episode too. I mean, okay. It was super fun.
Yeah.
And it kind of all happened.
Except for Brandon, and I produced that episode, but except for Brandon, you and I did all the family episodes.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Because Brad did both mom's episodes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay.
But going back to Noah, like, it all kind of went down while you were shooting that episode. The movie on Netflix premiered.
Yeah. He blew up right then.
Because like, I remember we were all watching his numbers on Instagram just like go, like skyrocket. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he's a great guy because I remember talking to him when he first took on the role of Jesus and just what a charmer he was, but just genuine, like which was just nice. And it was just like, I want to see where this guy goes. And obviously he's going places.
But also how difficult that was in a way. And
sure.
We were all looking at him to make sure he was okay. But he handled that so beautifully. Like he just kind of moved through it so fluidly. And, you know, he got a lot of noise, some good, mostly bad, right when it first happened. And then as the Fosters fans settled in, he kind of just settled in with them.
Yeah.
But it never really threw him for any loop. You know, he handled it beautifully.
When you guys, obviously, when you hired him, you picked somebody who was best for the role. You weren't looking for somebody that looked like the other guy.
No.
That played him before. This was completely different.
And
he made it his own. Yeah. Over time, you know, it was a little bit jarring in the beginning because you had an idea who Jesus was and he didn't look the same.
But, right.
Yeah, he's great. Good. Very cool.
In fact, he was like a whole foot taller.
at least.
He was. He's a tall guy. And when Brandon comes, just for people who want to know what's Brandon up to, we get a good catch up with Brandon.
We get to see where his successes and challenges are. It's great. It was great to see David too. He does an incredible job, and I don't want to give away the reveal, you know, for sort of what he's up to, but they actually don't even plan the visit with Brandon. They sort of run into him.
Oh, that's fun.
Which is great.
It's a really good romp of an episode. It's like so fun and all over the city, and it's a good time.
Are there writers from the Fosters that are also on Good Trouble?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure it was fun to kind of talk about, okay, where have all these characters been for 5 years?
Yeah.
To talk about where has Brandon been and kind of break those stories.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Anytime we get to go back to the Fosters characters, we always have such a good time.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. And then just rounding out the rest of the cast, you've created a good supporting cast, not just with Tommy Martinez, but everybody. I mean, and I like, how do you balance introducing those character stories? Because you're doing that in these first couple episodes. Everybody's getting like little pieces here and there, but is that a challenge to juggle those in?
You know, episode one is really Callie and Mariana's story. It's really sort of, you know, it's a premise pilot. Here they are. They've arrived. What's going to happen? And then episode two, we specifically, and it was Joanna who specifically said, let's do a party at the Coterie. Let's do almost a bottle episode. Let's be inside that building because we want to know more about it. And that'll give us an opportunity to spend a little time with all of these characters. And we do. And you, by the end of episode two, I feel like you've got some love for everybody who lives in that building.
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing feat, I have to say.
And I'm glad she pushed that because it's always scary to do a bottle episode.
Yeah.
Especially if it's the second episode.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, and it works so beautifully. And the Coterie, as designed by Rachel Cameron, which is
our production designer.
Yeah. It feels epic, you know? And so it was so nice to live in that space for an entire episode and not only get to know the characters, but also get to know the space better.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it was shot beautifully once again.
Yeah. So, thank you. But also Marco Magnoli, our brilliant DP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
just so good.
Yeah.
Are you guys on the same stages?
Oh, God, no.
You're not. Okay. I wasn't sure.
No, we're on the old Melrose Place stage, actually.
Perfect.
Literally. And that is why we have a pool.
The pool is there.
We dug it out.
Melrose Place pool. Yeah.
Okay, I love that.
We dug it out. Yeah.
They told us it was under the boards, and we were like,
wait a minute. rooftop pool.
Yeah, we went on a campaign to make sure that that guy, that suddenly the Coterie, which is a kind of a shithole, had an amazing rooftop pool. But, you know, everything has its pluses and minuses.
But it was under floorboards and, like, you know, a ton of stuff, and we just dug it out.
That's great. And the ghost of Heather Locklear's roaming around.
Yeah.
The Heather Locklear's character, because Heather Locklear's like, is still with us.
Jim Amanda. Killed Heather Locklear, guys.
Amanda. The ghost of Amanda
is
still
floating around. Yeah.
All right.
And that's good juju, I think.
It is.
And what was the gay character's name?
Matt.
Yes.
Doug Savant played
Matt. And the ghost of Matt.
It wasn't that long ago that I was looking up episodes on YouTube and just watching clips of things and just loving just how crazy
I just want to know where Grant's show is.
He's on Dynasty.
Yeah, he's on Dynasty.
He's Blake Carrington on Dynasty.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, come back, Grant Show.
Let's see.
I had the biggest crush on him.
He still looks good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're diverting, but Good Trouble airs on Freeform.
Tuesday nights, 8 o'clock.
Okay.
On Freeform.
Yeah, 13 episodes. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah. And it's a really strong season.
It's a good ride.
There's not a dud in a bunch. Right, you know. Joanna's been driving the writing, and she just has done an incredible job with the team. And we've had amazing directors. We've been privileged to direct a bunch of it, and it's been a really, really fun experience. So proud of it.
Yeah, well, I love what I've seen so far. So you have a fan right here. So
thank you.
As always.
All right, thanks you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the TV Insider Podcast. Thank you to our producer, Lori Perna, and we'll be looking forward to bringing more TV coverage throughout 2019 and beyond. Thanks. Take care. Bye.